So this evening, I want to explore the question that I asked at the end of the sitting. That is, how can we use this very unusual and mysterious time as a way to deepen our practice in the ways that most call us? And I think it's interesting to look at these times. There are obviously a lot of challenges from this time. Might be for many people, of course, the lack of work, financial issues, perhaps even relatives or family who are sick. People who live alone, there might be just that those kind of challenges, even maybe not having so much time to touch, to have physical contact. And yet it's a very unusual time in that there also are opportunities and even gifts that come out of this time of crisis. And, just in talking with a lot of people, I can hear that people in being less busy have asked questions about what's important in ways that haven't been asked. For how many people is something like that true for you? That there's been a chance to really look more deeply. I was talking with a friend today, it was actually her birthday, and she was telling me that, I mean, we were just talking about the ways that she's been doing almost no traveling. I've done almost no traveling. I get in my car about every 7 to 10 days, and typically go a mile or two. So not too much. And that out of that lack of traveling, there are gifts that occur. It might be a deepened solitude or a deepened sense of what's important. My niece, who is in her early 30s, and had an office job, more or less said, "I don't think I want to go back to an office job again." She's doing the same amount of work, but she can set her hours and take a walk in the middle of the day and so forth. So there might be a deepened sense of solitude. There might be much less doing. And we almost step away from the trance of busyness that is so strong. Do you know that in the Japanese language, the word that we would translate as being busy is made up of the figures that are best translated into English as "the heart dies"? I've seen another translation, "the soul dies." That's what one sense of busyness is, or a negative sense. Doesn't have to be that, of course, but it's interesting that those are the figures chosen in Japanese for what we call busyness. And I know for myself, there have been some very unusual and unexpected gifts from the pandemic, from the crisis of the pandemic, which is really, of course, at the same time, a series of multiple crises. There's the pandemic, there's the climate crisis, there's the crisis related to centuries of not fully resolved racial injustice, there's the economy. And then, of course, we also have the crisis of democracy. Very much, I'm sure, on many, many people's minds. And yet, interestingly, for myself, I think I mentioned some of this in June, there have been unexpected gifts. I mentioned, I believe, that I was on retreat at the end of February, was scheduled to be on retreat for a month at Spirit Rock, had to go home on March 15th, and kept the retreat going at home while integrating it with shopping, listening to the news, emails, and so forth, but still probably 9 hours a day of formal practice. And then, and talking every 2 days with a close friend who was doing the same thing. And we both decided at the end of March to continue. And I've more or less kept going a kind of home retreat, which I'm now in my 6 month on, where I'm doing activities like I'm doing now, some teaching, some mentoring of people, but a lot more formal practice than I've really ever done outside of retreats, probably 4 to 5 hours a day of formal practice, and bringing in awareness as much as possible into the flow of the day. And it really is an unexpected gift. I should say that my friend is also doing something very similar. He's had to go back to a little more work, but we still talk every few days. And for myself, this is like an answer to one way of deepening practice that has clearly been my personal edge for quite a few years. You know, at a certain point, my practice on retreats, or when I was have really been settled, was fairly stable and wonderful, and it became really clear that the core edge of learning was how to bring the practice in that level of practice or that quality practice into the flow of the day. And I tried in different ways, some, you know, a little more formal practice and so forth, but the way this has developed, which was not according to plan, was unexpected, has really given my sense of daily life practice a depth that it's never had. The gift of the pandemic, unexpected, very, you know, very, very interesting. And so I'm wondering just if there is a way that for each of us, this particular time, which is unusual, some of us have more open time, some maybe have less, but for many of us, there may be more open time. There might be, along with that, a sense of really asking the question, what's most important for me? And having the time and lack of busyness for that question to reverberate. What's most important to me? How do I want to spend my time? Again, some of us may not have more time, but many of us do. You know, some version of answering that question that Mary Oliver asked in one poem, what am I to do with my own wild, precious life? You know, and I want to think about deepening of practice in three ways and then really see what each of us finds as calling you. And it's really to think of that story that I sometimes tell from Howard Thurman, the great African-American theologian, activist, mystic, who taught at Howard, taught at Boston University, moved out to California in the 1940s, I think, and helped set up the first interracial church in San Francisco. And towards the end of his life, around 1970, he died around 1980, he was asked by a young man, what should I do? And he, as an activist, of course, might have said, well, we have this project, that project. We really could use people with this and that, but he didn't say that at all. He said, listen to this coming from an activist. Don't ask what the world needs, but rather ask what makes you come alive, because what the world needs is people who have come alive. That's what we're looking for. And so a question is, what makes you come alive? How do you come alive? And I'm using practice as a general term for, we could talk about it as the way that we come more alive, become more present, express more of our gifts, manifest more in our own being, in our life with others, in our contributions to the world. And so the question is, what is that that calls each of us right now? And I'll talk about three areas. One is deepening formal practice. The second is deepening what we might call daily life practice. And the third is deepening our service, our work, our contributions to the world, to a world in need. And some of us may be called to all three. I find that. I find that I'm very much called to all three, and that there's been, for me, I think all three going on, that there's a deepening of formal practice, partly simply in the increased level of sitting, and then a deepening in the extension to the rest of the day. And yet, I think I probably mentioned the last time when I was talking about transforming racism that at a certain point, I was feeling quite content. This was maybe in May. I was feeling very content, really enjoying the retreat. And then after the killing of George Floyd, there was a certain inner anguish that my own sense of contentment conflicted with my own wanting to contribute, to be of help at this time of crisis, particularly related to racial injustice. Of course, there are other crises. And there was a certain amount of anguish, and I felt sort of called to come out in some ways of that more restricted sense of retreat and include participating and contributing to the world as part of it. There's this way that I think all of us know that we can be very personally content at times, and even in a sense get used to a world which is sick in many ways. Do you know that one? And how do we live with that? That we can be actually in a sense well adjusted to a world which is unwell, to systems which are out of whack. And how do we respond to that? And so I was feeling a version of that earlier. So I'll go through each of the three, then I'll invite us to explore ourselves how we really respond to answering this question, how we respond to the question. So first, we may have more time and say, I really want to deepen my own formal practice. For some of us, it might be actually to have a regular sitting that we haven't had be so regular in the past period of time. And there may be a little more time. We may be able to take advantage of all the virtual sanghas and deepen in that way. For others, it may be, maybe you've had a regular, I don't know, 20 or 30 minute sitting, and you want to increase the quantity of sitting. It's one way to deepen. There is some relationship between quantity and quality, and quantity sometimes takes us deeper in certain ways. If you have any calling to shift your formal practice, my suggestion is to not to make a general commitment, but to make a very, very strong commitment for 1 week and meet the commitment, whatever happens. As they say, come hell or high water, and do that. So those are some possibilities. And I should say that as I'm going to talk about a number of different ways that we can deepen practice, and what I invite us to listen for are the one or two or three which most resonate with you. In other words, I'm not saying do everything I mentioned. I'm not saying do all of these things. I'm saying listen for what you have a sense makes you come alive or resonates, and then move in that direction. One of the other ways to deepen formal practice is to bring a few 5 or 10 minute segments into the day. Add a few 5 or 10 minute segments of formal practice, maybe before you have a meal or before you go to sleep. And when you have more segments during the day, this helps to really stitch together the awareness so that it can manifest more when you're not doing formal practice. Of course, having the support of groups and friends can be very, very helpful. We can also work more fully with teachings. And I know many of you do this. You may want to take on a teaching, a beautiful way to practice. I know several of you whose practice I know pretty well here do this. You may take a given theme for a month. Could be generosity or concentration or investigation or working with reactivity, or mindfulness of the body, and you could choose to work with that theme and remember it during the day. This can very much deepen our practice. And that kind of emphasis also integrates the formal and the informal practice. So taking a theme, you could look at the list of the core qualities mentioned in the 7 factors of awakening, mindfulness or energy, investigation, joy, tranquility, concentration, equanimity, or the qualities named in the listing of the paramis, qualities like patience, generosity, loving kindness, and so forth. I think especially in a hard time, it can be very, very crucial to bring in a heart practice every day. I strongly recommend that. Something that, in the language of the Buddha, gladdens the heart. To whether in a kind of meditation, or it could be also what we do in terms of connecting with beauty. I think a very powerful spiritual practice is to have a beauty practice. Does anyone have a beauty practice? Okay. Where you connect with the earth, the forest, or art, music. And this gladdening of the heart is particularly important and powerful in times of crisis. I thought I'd read a poem from Mary Oliver. Some of you know, "When I Am Among the Trees." When I am among the trees, especially the willows and the honey locust, equally the beech, the oaks, and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness. I would almost say that they save me, and daily. I am so distant from the hope of myself, in which I have goodness and discernment, and never hurry through the world, but walk slowly and bow often. Around me the trees stir in their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches and they call out, "It's simple," they say, "and you too have come into the world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light and to shine." So we hear a lot of those other themes of not watching out for the busyness, staying a while. You know, I notice having a lot of conditioning to be busy, even with the schedule I've described, I go and do a little ritual every morning after breakfast by the redwood tree in my backyard. And I sit there, and some of you know this, I have a ritual in which I talk to my parents, both of whom have died. And we talk, and I often get counsel from my father. He can feel some energy that I'm trying to get to what I'm going to do during the day. He says, no rush, and something settles. Very good spiritual counsel. And so there are ways that being with beauty, finding that way to slow down, so crucial. And we can also deepen in our informal practice, in our bringing of awareness to the flow of the day. Again, an edge for so many of us to make our practice real. You know, I think there's a way in which we've emphasized so much formal meditation in a number of Buddhist communities that we haven't given justice to the deepening of daily life practice. And, you know, I've given talks on that theme here at Marin Sangha a number of times, so you've known that it's an interest of mine. But there, again, there's been something like a breakthrough in the last months. So, you know, daily life is harder because we have that sense of busyness. We have the sense, you know, and I've heard this is very much there even for people who are retired, the sense of being a doer and needing to do things. Anyone feel that even though you're maybe retired? Right? It's very strong. The conditioning is very, very strong. And we have to work with that. You know, there are ways of working with that in the formal setting. We often just have so much thinking. We're drawn often to what? To listen to the news. How should I say it? More than we need to do. Has anyone ever experienced that? Okay, I think there are more hands needed to be raised there. Okay, but yeah, as I hear it as almost universal, people, there's an addictive quality we want to find out. And of course, again, there are multiple crises, so it's important to be well informed. So we have our busyness, we have our sense of the doer, we often get addicted to the various media. And we, if that wasn't all there was, we also think a lot. We find our, you know, again, we're in a culture which has a lot of thinking. And so how do we work with that? How do we work with those kind of tendencies? One of the main ways that we can deepen daily life practice is to really cultivate mindfulness of the body. It's really a fundamental area. So if you cultivate mindfulness of the body in formal practice and then find ways to bring it into the flow of the daily life, it can really make a difference. It could be simply to say, let me be aware of my body as I'm washing the dishes or brushing my teeth or taking my walk, and do that and strengthen the mindfulness of the body in other ways. And find ways to have that quality of mindfulness of the body be stronger. It's a main way to cultivate daily life practice. I led a retreat in June, which was a lot of fun to do on Zoom. It was a 5-day retreat. It was on the theme of deepening daily life practice. And I was excited because in the retreat, I had people talking from the beginning of the second full day. We had the first day just to cool out a little bit. But then we had people talking, and so it wasn't a silent retreat for the most part. And it was more like the daily flow. And we worked with a number of different tools. Mindfulness of body was a key tool. that we worked with. We worked with a number of different tools, and I was very pleased, and I've actually kept working with the people from the retreats. We've had meetings after the retreat. We've had 6 meetings, actually, and about every 2 weeks now. And it's been a way to keep the daily life practice going. But a number of people really saw doing that retreat, in which we were maybe putting 5 or 6 hours, 7 hours a day into both formal practice and daily life practice, that their relation to daily life practice had changed. They had maybe been at a lot of retreats where we have wonderful retreats and then hard to keep things up in daily life. And for a large number of the people in this retreat, that was changed. And that's one of the options at our time. We can really deepen daily life. So I mentioned mindfulness of the body. Another key way to practice is to really be on the lookout for moments of reactivity. Notice when your mind is reactive, when it either wants something or doesn't want something, wants to push it away. That can be a major way to really deepen. If we would notice and then be present and mindful with those kind of situations, it can really bring attention to our daily life practice. And again, another one would be to have that sense of gladdening of the heart, doing loving kindness, compassion, being with beauty. I really appreciate several of the people I work with, many of them work in the helping professions, and they find, especially people, I'm thinking of some who work in hospitals, some of them are doing metta much of the day. Some of the heart practices are really amenable to bringing in much of the day, especially if we're helping others. You know, it could be if we're therapists or parents or in the medical area. And that sense of bringing the heart more and more into the day. But you can do it just at home as well. And maybe a last area that I'll mention is frequently pausing and setting intentions. In the retreat, at the end of every session, when people are about to go into an hour or two of what we called home practice, off of Zoom, I would have people pause and set an intention. That's something we can do throughout the day. You can have a bell ring every half an hour or hour, or more frequently, pause, set intentions. Can be very, very powerful. And then the last area I want to mention is this area of bringing our practice into our work, our service, and particularly into responding to the challenges of the world. You know, and how many of us are drawn at least a certain amount of time to say, I want to contribute to the resolution of one or more of our crises. I want to put 5 hours a week into responding to climate issues. I want to be part of a group that looks into racial conditioning and recognizes this as part of the long-term resolution. How am I called at this time of crisis to see what is most alive for me in terms of helping a world in need? One of the studies that's really stayed with me is a study from about 2007 done of nonviolent movements. And the authors studied about 25 nonviolent movements from the last 30 or 40 years, occurring in all sorts of conditions, including dictatorships. And they found that when 2.5% of the population or more were involved in a nonviolent movement, the movement always was successful, 100%. How many want to be part of that 2.5%? right, to address climate issues or racial injustice or, you know, the protection of democracy. You know, and I'm not saying do everything, but there's a way in which we're called now. You know, we're really called. You know, what are the gifts I have to offer? You know, one of the things I've learned from Joanna Macy is having what she calls a sense of deep time. And even as a thought experiment right now, think, you know, whether you think you'll be alive in 2050 or not, what would people looking back at the year 2050 say? This is how things were turned around. How were things turned around? If you imagine yourself as a future being from the year 2050, how were things turned around and what was your part in it? And again, I'm not asking everyone to do everything, but I'm saying, listen for what has life for you. Dorothy Day, the great Catholic social activist, said, "The greatest challenge of the day is to bring about a revolution of the heart. You will know your vocation by the joy it brings you. You will know when it's right." And so it's this question of listening. What helps me come more alive, to use Howard Thurman's words? What really calls me? Another way of asking it is, what are my next steps? What comes next for me? So I want to finish by reading a poem from David White called Just Beyond Yourself. That's his metaphor for one's next step or what's calling you. Just beyond yourself, David White. Just beyond yourself, it's where you need to be. Half a step into self-forgetting and the rest restored by what you'll meet. There is a road always beckoning. When you see the two sides of it closing together at that far horizon and deep in the foundations of your own heart at exactly the same time, that's how you know it's where you have to go. That's how you know it's the road you have to follow. That's how you know you have to go. That's how you know it's just beyond yourself and it's where you need to be. So I want to invite us right now to go into groups of three, which I think Bill will organize just in a few moments. And we'll have 10 minutes. And I want to invite each of the three people to speak for 2 or 3 minutes. If you have more time, you can keep talking. And I want to ask you to look into the two questions that we looked at the end of the sitting. Number one, how do I feel called to deepen my practice? And it's okay not to know. How do I feel called to deepen my practice? And then secondly, what supports me in deepening my practice? How do I feel called to deepen my practice? And what supports me in deepening my practice? Again, fine to be wherever you are. So we'll have about 10 minutes now. And Bill, you can set it up and then have us be coming back in 10 minutes. And then we'll have some time for discussion when everyone's back. Okay. And thank you for your kind attention during my talk. Great. So welcome back, everyone. And I think probably most of you had a chance to be in groups. How many of you had a chance to be in the groups and explore? Great. So some of you did not, but hopefully The questions are still alive. So let me just invite any reflections, questions, anywhere that you'd like to go with this question of deepening our practice and understanding these three areas, and also really having it be perfectly okay not to know. And I was thinking of that. I found a quote from Thomas Merton, the great, you know, Trappist Catholic contemplative, and he said this. And this is from his journals. Using the language of God, Christian language. My Lord God, I have no idea where I am going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end, nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think I am following your will does not mean I am actually doing so. And so he goes on. But I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. And he goes on to say, but there's a quality in which we sometimes don't know. And that's perfectly fine. That's often a phase. So anyone want to share what you came to, ask a question? I guess we can use the, I can see, looks like how many people, we have almost everyone on the screen, but if you can use the raise hands function under participants, or anyone wants to raise your hand so I could see it, you can do that too. Please, Patty. Yeah.
Thank you, Donald. I was brought back to something I've always wondered. Why isn't gratitude one of the Brahma Viharas? Because I'm called toward gratitude more than I ever have been. I haven't really been anywhere since March. And at first it was a little bit of an adventure, and then it was a challenge. Now it's just tedious. But because of physical stuff I'm going through and my health issues, I have been struck, almost dumbstruck, by how kind people are. My neighbors, my friends, my partner, my family. The kindness that has been showered on me, I'm not accustomed to receiving. And my gratitude is growing and growing and growing. So I made it a practice to be conscious of my gratitude. And it expands to everything. When I walk with the trees, I'm grateful for the leaves. I'm grateful for the sunlight. I'm grateful for the fresh air. The gratitude just grows. It seems to be self-inflating. And my practice seems called toward gratitude for all my blessings and privileges.
Well, thank you, Patty. It sounds like quite a deepening in this last period of time. And gratitude is a wonderful practice that can really, it sounds like it's really, as it were, weaving your days together. And the way you're talking about it really echoes how the Buddha talked about it. He talked about gratitude as coming out of a recognition that we are receiving metta and gifts from others. And so the two are closely related. Why isn't one of the Brahma Vihara? Well, I don't know if we can have another vote and reestablish the Brahma Vihara, but many of us would vote for gratitude. And some people speak of it as an honorary member of the Brahma Vihara. When I teach gratitude, I often teach it as in part an expression of mudita. You know, traditionally, having appreciation and joy for what's happening in one's own life was actually not part of the formal practice. They thought it could incur selfishness or self-centeredness. And of course, for people with our kind of conditioning, or with Western conditioning, in which often there's a lot of self-judgment, gratitude can be very, very helpful. And I include gratitude as one way to express mudita, or joy, for what's happening, that's going well in one's own life. So I certainly group it. I personally have a grouping of the four Brahma Vihara plus gratitude plus forgiveness plus empathy.
Thank you.
So my expanded list has 7.
Thank you.
Thank you. But a wonderful way to deepen. And again, coming out of a creative response to your own circumstances, which not everyone would have. Yeah, thank you. Others, a question or a sharing? Yeah, Veta.
So I'm learning to the issue of being aware of my body.
Mm-hmm.
My body is not something I've ever really liked.
Mm.
And I have having some back problems. So when I'm walking, there's some pain. So it started being very aware of that.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. So I'm now aware of other things about my body that bring joy.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, it, and of course then I'm concentrating less on the discomfort.
Yeah.
So the discomfort is less.
Yeah.
So, but it's really been very, helpful for me in many ways to find, to be aware of my body and find some joy there.
That's great. Yeah. Coming out of the, residues of the old conditioning and even the present day discomfort at times. So that sounds very skillful. It really, and it really helps tremendously with the deepening of daily life practice just throughout the day. So thank you for sharing that. Well, a lot of important points there, I think, that will be really, can really resonate with others. Thanks. Other sharings or comments? Yeah. Please, is that Patty?
Yeah. You're unmuted. You were muted. Yeah, okay. And you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. I think I love your ideas about setting an intention, like committing to it for like a week or something at a time, and just the different ideas of having a theme in order to practice maybe, you know, one major virtue. And I think, you know, I had a great listening partner, Elizabeth, but one of the things I'm kind of struck by is I'm not in a position to be resting. I'm a therapist in a residential treatment setting for children. And I'm actually a supervisor, but we've had so many therapists leave that I'm having to do both. And so I'm really exhausted. Hmm. And so I'm feeling like, you know, one of my beliefs about myself is that I have to work and work and work and earn a sense of being able to rest. But yeah, the need is so great right now that I can't possibly fill it. So I guess one of my intentions really has to be is having some kind of loving kindness for my own personal boundaries, as well as my sense of being available to others, I guess. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very important reflections. I mean, we need, you know, to be sustainable in so many dimensions, but in terms of our own work and, that's really, really crucial. The conditions sound hard, right?
Yeah.
And how to modify them so you can be doing that work for the long haul.
Exactly. Correct.
And I know that, you know, in many settings, I've been asked sometimes to go into medical settings and do consultations, and There are a lot of systemic factors in which people are simply overworked.
Yes. Yes,
right?
Especially right now. Yes.
Which have to do with the institutions being they have to do with a lot of issues, economic and otherwise. But
yes.
Yeah, how do we have sustainable institutions? Like I was invited once to, they wanted me to come into a group of doctors and nurses and teach mindfulness. And they wanted to talk about the institutional issues and wanted to talk about what they called moral injury.
Mm.
You know, the issue of how the institutional setup makes it hard to do, for one to do what one knows is right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know that one very much.
Yeah, yeah. So thank you. And yeah, so it's for your, for you, the practice is both personal, but it's can also hopefully contribute to a larger situation there.
Right. Right. Good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Maybe time for one more. We're going to end with metta. How many people had a clearer sense of what's calling you right now? How many had a little clearer sense of that? How many people were already completely clear about what's calling you? Okay.
That's very funny.